Hey, everybody, it's 6 past the hour, and this is Indirect Democracy. This week on Indirect Democracy, I'll be taking a look at the 2006 midterm elections. There'll be an important global warming update. Plus, we have a new sponsor. There'll be the President's Horoscope and the What a Weenie Award. Damn, I like this song. So, welcome to podcast number 11, episode number 11 of Indirect Democracy, found at www.indirectdemocracy.com. I am your host. My name is David. And let's see, welcome to all of you who are listening to this show, this podcast, if you found it through the Progressive Podcast Network, of which I am a proud member. And welcome to all of you listening via WIRN, the World Internet Radio Network. If you're looking at your clock, it's not 6 past the hour. That intro is a tribute to the morning's edition, and the ending, past the music, is my homage to the Marc Maron Show. If you want, you can check out those shows via the Snot Green Sea. There's a link to that particular site via the favorite link section at the homepage for Indirect Democracy. Well, this was it. The big day has passed, and I will get into the election results in just a bit, but every episode of Indirect Democracy begins with a global warming update, and I have an important story from this week. If you subscribe to Rolling Stone or just buy it every now and then at the newsstands, this week's issue had a cover story called Dr. Evil's Plan to Stop Global Warming, or the actual title is Can Dr. Evil Save the World? And yes, he can, for
$1 million.
Okay, here's the story. If you're familiar with the concept of global warming and how it works, greenhouse gases, primarily made up of CO2 emissions, have trapped heat in the Earth's atmosphere and caused the rise in temperatures and the subsequent melting of the polar ice caps. The ice caps act like large mirrors that deflect sunlight and, of course, the heat and energy from the sun, bouncing it way back into space. And this helps stabilize our global temperatures. So without these ice caps, heat from the sun is trapped in the ocean and unfortunately even tends to melt more ice. And this actually starts to heat up the water and affects everything from the weather we experience to how aquatic life is balanced out throughout the planet. So according to this article in Rolling Stone, last summer a group of scientists met in Colorado to discuss solutions to how to solve global warming, short of shutting down the economy. They met because scientists at NASA found that an area of polar ice twice the size of Texas melted. Now, according to leading scientists, the Arctic ice cap will be free of any ice by the end of the century. And some are predicting that by 2050, there will be no ice during the summers in the Arctic Circle. So, the proposed solution that caused the most controversy, both good and bad, was presented by Lowell Wood. Now, Lowell Wood is considered by many to be one of the foremost scientists in the United States. He worked for more than 4 decades at the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory and was a protege of the man that devised the Strategic Defense Initiative, or the Star Wars program, in the 1980s. I believe his name was Edward Teller. This was the big program that the Reagan administration touted as a missile defense shield. You know, to digress a little bit, the same missile defense system that the current administration wants to use, even though most people agree that it'll probably be a suitcase bomb or something of that effect that would probably be the type of weapon of mass destruction we would most have to worry about. So the concept of a missile shield to defend against, you know, a suitcase bomb, silly as it is, that's what they're going for. But I've digressed. Wood's reputation in scientific circles, if we're going back to the global warming story, ranges from brilliant to a perfect example of big science gone awry. But to many, he is considered a planetary engineer. And Wood's proposal is this. Quote, Wood's proposal was not technologically complex. It's based on the idea, well proven by atmospheric scientists, that volcano eruptions alter the climate for months by loading the skies with tiny particles that act as mini reflectors, shading out sunlight and cooling the Earth. Why not apply the same principles to saving the Arctic? Getting the particles into the stratosphere wouldn't be a problem. You could generate them easily enough by burning sulfur then dumping the particles out of high-flying 747s, spraying them into the sky with long hoses, or even shooting them up there with naval artillery. They'd be invisible to the naked eye, Wood argued, and harmless to the environment. Depending on the number of particles you injected, you could not only stabilize Greenland's polar ice, you could actually grow it. Results would be quick. If you started spraying particles into the stratosphere tomorrow, you'd see changes in the ice within a few months. And if it worked over the Arctic, it would be simple enough to expand the program to encompass the rest of the planet. In effect, you could create a global thermostat, one that people could dial up or down to suit their needs, or the needs of polar bears. End quote. The reaction was swift. Some called it a frightening solution, while others wondered why we weren't doing it now. Myself, I just wondered, why is it that this concept of shooting sulfate particles reminds me too much of the Dark Skies program that they used in The Matrix? In so many ways, it's a frightening proposal. But there was a quote that caught me. And here was the quote. Quote, "Here's a guy who knows more about the Earth's atmosphere than anyone else alive, and he is telling us that the situation is so dire, we need to go about intervening with the atmosphere on a planetary scale." End quote. I give this article some thought because of the scientists that gave this idea some credence, not in implementing it, but in reviewing it for possible serious consideration. I was struck, by a startling and almost terrifying moment of clarity that, even the article brings up. If the problem is this serious, that we are considering the idea of what is in essence a type of nuclear winter, then the problem of global warming is maybe even more serious than we've imagined. At some points, it might be a good idea. The basis is created around the idea of a volcano explosion that would fill the atmosphere with ash and cause regional temperatures to fall. But to think of it, fiddling with the atmosphere to the point of filling it with sulfates, all for the purpose of allowing us to continue with our gluttonous ways of oil consumption and CO2 emissions. And all I could hear in my head was George Carlin saying, "Haven't we done enough? In damaging this planet, haven't we done enough?" This solution, to me, is nothing more than sweeping dust under the carpet. It's lazy and it asks nothing of us. And in so many ways, it fits us. We don't want to do anything, but expect everything. And if you believe that this is the best solution, well then, I know a preacher that's got a big old bag of meth he bought but didn't plan on using. Maybe you'll believe that too. We have to demand more of each other and ourselves. And if you want to see some of the pictures from the gallery from Rolling Stone as to the amount of damage that the planet is starting to experience through global warming, there's a link through Rolling Stone you can go to. That link is rollingstone.com/Dr. Evil, and spell out the entire word doctor. And of course, I'll have the link up through the research page section for podcast number 11 of Indirect Democracy in case you want to just go through there. And I also encourage you to check out some of the other links regarding global warming at the favorite links section. Check out climatecrisis.com, go to Calculate Your Impact. And if you want, you can also find the entire slideshow for Al Gore's slideshow regarding global warming. That's through the research links for podcast number 1 of Indirect Democracy. And I encourage us all to do this because if you think about it, just with this guy's history, we can't forget that SDI was a complete failure except for politically. And this guy also wanted to explode a nuclear bomb on the moon to help find water for a proposed moon base.
Let this be a reminder to you all that this organization will not tolerate failure.
He may be sharp, but kind of scary. Okay, we have a new sponsor and several ads to play from that sponsor. And here is the very first ad.
Reverend Haggard, the DA wants to see you about your claims of possessing methamphetamines. Oh, and the church leadership wants to talk to you about your affair with the male prostitute.
Want to get away?
Southwest Airlines offers daily flights out of the Denver area.
You are now free to move about the country.
Let's see, I have a news story that I wanted to share with you, a couple of news stories, sort of semi-related. I'm going to read to you a quote that I came across, and here's the quote. "Heavenly Father, give us grace and mercy. Help us this next week and a half as we go into national elections, and Lord, we pray for our country. Father, we pray lies would be exposed and deception exposed. Father, we pray that wisdom would come upon our electorate. That quote came from Ted Haggard in his last sermon to the New Life Church, where he was the head pastor. Now, if you are unfamiliar with the story of the Reverend Ted Haggard, he was recently disgraced and had to give up his leadership of the church after being found admitting to the purchase of hundreds of dollars worth of methamphetamine that he used, apparently allegedly, as part of a 3-year business relationship, if you want to call it that, with a male prostitute, and apparently using that drug to enhance the experience of his sexual relationship with this male prostitute. I find it interesting because it's somehow linked in a way with this other story I found through The Advocate. And here's the story. The title is Martina Navratilova Lashes Out Against Gay Sheep Experiments. Quote, tennis star Martina Navratilova and People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals are condemning hormone-altering experiments on gay sheep at Oregon State University and Oregon Health and Science University. The experiment, funded by taxpayers through 2008, seeks to manipulate sheep's sexual orientation and make them heterosexual. The experiment, headed by OHSU's Charles Roselli and OSU's Frederick Stormshack, involves drugging pregnant sheep to prevent the actions of hormones in their fetus's brain and cutting open the brains of rams they called male-oriented. This is to find the hormonal mechanisms behind homosexual tendencies so that they can be changed by an estrogen device. According to the project's grant applications, the experimenters plan to extrapolate the test results to humans. It's amazing because the connection I found between the Haggard story, or the Haggard quote, and of course this article from The Advocate and experimented on so-called, with gay sheep, deals with the subject of choice, because the constant argument has been about the choice for homosexuality. And I think we have all encountered in some way, shape, through friends, through our family, the people that we just know, just by who they are, that they're gay. Sometimes you meet somebody and within 5 seconds of meeting them, you go, no, he's gay. You know, I remember meeting a guy at work that it didn't take very long to go, oh yeah, he's gay. For many people, this is not a choice. This is how they were made. This is how they were created. And the evidence is being found out and obviously explained through this article that we have the introduction or the knowledge that animal species do engage in homosexual acts, which adds to that argument that it is not a choice. It is who they are. And I thought about this because it wasn't so much to take a little bit of glee. There is a type of schadenfreude that comes through with what happened to Reverend Haggard because of the hypocrisy. But imagine the pain he could have prevented to his family, his friends, the church leadership, the thousands of people that he represented who believed in him, if he had just been open about who he is and not gone the other way, to live a life where he espoused a type of prejudice against the very type of person that he is. Because the choice that he made wasn't so much about his sexuality, but it was about denying that part of who he was because it was in some ways a type of way for him to gain power, money, and he made a choice to live that deception instead of making the choice to be who he was. And that's the part that's frightening about the experiments at Oregon State University, is that, once again, everybody wants to deal with the possible cure for something that is biologically set. It's part of who they were, but once again, it's about curing something that just can't be cured. It's something that occurs within these animals and occurs within people. And that's the part that I found, you know, just sort of sad and almost pathetic in how it works and how they want it to work. Because it always gets me thinking whenever I think about homosexuality and civil rights, because when we look at civil rights arguments are based around the concept of strict scrutiny, intermediate scrutiny, and rational basis. And with strict scrutiny, it deals with ethnicity and race. Intermediate deals with gender and illegitimacy. And rational basis is everybody else. And that's where homosexuality got based, is within rational basis for all their arguments. Strict scrutiny, intermediate scrutiny, both deal with biological fact. Race is who you are. Black, Mexican, you know, Chinese, doesn't matter. That's set. Ethnicity, same thing. It's biological for where you are and where you're from. Gender, obvious, set. And illegitimacy, you know, proving through a biological fact that you are, in fact, related to that person. And here we have evidence that's being brought forward that homosexuality is a biologically set factor. And yet, once again, to avoid this argument about dealing with people with who they really are and not what they practice in the privacy of their own bedroom, that we're trying to find cures for something that is just part of what they are. Well, the point of bringing up the article is just to talk about the choices that we have. Here's a choice that he could have had in being honest about who he was. And here's it's like our government money being spent to cure something that is not a choice. And I think it's time once again for us to try to get some of our priorities set and just bring it up, because gotta admit, I was pretty close to giving it the What a Weenie Award, but wanted to share it with you in just this type of aspect and compare and contrasting the choices that Ted Haggard made. Well, it's time to read the President's Horoscope. And I do this once a week to give the President some guidance through his career. And as we know, our president is a Cancer. So here is his career meter reading from the pages of Elle magazine for the week of November 5th, 2006. His career meter reading is a 7. Your ideas are interesting, but may be too controversial at this point and remain unsupported by some of your colleagues. It's all about timing. Instead of attempting to bulldoze your way through a thick wall of resistance, bide your time and be as cooperative as possible. Yeah, I think he's going to have to do that. A little more give and take on your part might soften up another stubborn resistance. A number of you may feel somewhat alarmed due to talk about reshuffling priorities and the likelihood of a stunning shift in the balance of power. Yeah, wow, Elle magazine is really on target this week. Again, bide your time. You can learn to adjust to the changes occurring around you. If you're willing to have an open mind, you may discover that some of these changes can actually make your theories look pretty good. This week's touchstones are green calcite and celestite. And let's hear it for Elle magazine. Yeah, they were really on target this week. That is a stunning, stunning astrological reading. But let's see if he actually has an open mind. That's good career advice for you. That's your horoscope, Mr. President. So I say, actually put it into effect. But here is an ad from the Progressive Podcast Network.
Outsourcing, built-in obsolescence, environmental pollution, accounting fraud, corruption, rip-offs, hijacking utility prices, greed, global warming, out-of-control marketing, destroying the food supply, mass propaganda, illegal surveillance, sweatshops. Had enough? Stop. Think. Listen. Act up. The No Respect Podcast, covering corporate America's war on the American consumer. Catch the podcast at http://no-respect.blogspot.com or look on iTunes under No Respect. Respect yourself.
So, before I start talking about the elections, I would like to encourage you all to see the HBO documentary, Hacking Democracy. If you're interested in learning more about the issues and problems arising from the use of electronic voting, you can find the link to the video at Google Video. Just type in Hacking Democracy, or once again, I do have a link at the homepage for Indirect Democracy. And I wanted to thank C. Nick Thomas of the Morning Seditionist blog site for informing the MS blog about the links to Hacking Democracy. And of course, thanks to all of our sponsors, because here's another ad.
Secretary Rumsfeld, the president is on the phone for you.
Want to get away? Southwest Airlines offers daily flights to Florida or any other retirement location.
You are now free to move about the country.
Well, the elections have passed, and the Democratic Party has gained control of the House and Senate, and this is it. This is what we've been talking about for weeks, what I've been talking about. The one-party rule is over, but there will be no gloating. But for those of you who are listening from the Morning Seditionist website, here you go.
It's peanut butter jelly time! Peanut butter jelly time! Peanut butter jelly time!
Okay, that was a little long, but I couldn't help myself. Oh my goodness, you know, the ripples of this election have begun, and those of you shocked by the resignation of Donald Rumsfeld, raise your hands. One, two... Well, I don't know about you, but I have my hand up. And I shouldn't be surprised about what occurred, because apparently this has been in the making for quite a while. Well, if you were watching the press conference on Wednesday at 10 a.m., it was obvious that the president had this election ready to go. In Robert Gates, the former head of the CIA under George H.W. Bush's administration. So it was also the first time the president actually admitted that he sort of misled the electorate and that this election process had been going on for a long time. But there should be no surprise in this. But like I said, I'm surprised. You weren't expecting it because the president had claimed for the past few months that Rummy was his guy. And to sort of paraphrase and, you know, jokingly quote Rumsfeld himself, you know, my goodness and gracious stars, you know, realistically, talk about crashing a plane into the Andes and eating the dead. After weeks of standing by Rummy, the president let this guy so quickly, you'd have thought that Rummy had the Ebola. That's how quickly he dropped this guy. And surprised as I am, you know, the writing really was on the wall. You know, if you haven't read this editorial by the Army Times, let me share it with you. Let me find it here. Here it is. Editorial dated November 4th, 2006. Title, Time for Rumsfeld to Go. And here's the quote. So long as our government requires the backing of an aroused and informed public opinion, it is necessary to tell the hard, bruising truth. That statement was written by Pulitzer Prize-winning war correspondent Marguerite Higgins more than a half century ago during the Korean War. But until recently, the hard, bruising truth about the Iraq War has been difficult to come by from leaders in Washington. One rosy reassurance after another has been handed down by President Bush, Vice President Cheney, and Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld. Mission accomplished. The insurgency is in its last throes, and back off, we know what we're doing, are a few choice examples. Military leaders generally toed the line, although a few retired generals eventually spoke out from the safety of the sidelines, inciting criticism equally from anti-war types who thought they should have spoken out while still in uniform, and pro-war foes who thought the generals should have kept their critiques behind closed doors. Now, however, a new chorus of criticism is beginning to resonate. Active duty military leaders are starting to voice their misgivings about the war's planning, execution, and dimming prospects for success. Army General John Abizaid, chief of U.S. Central Command, told a Senate Armed Services Committee in September, I believe that sectarian violence is probably as bad as I've ever seen, and that if not stopped, it is possible that Iraq could move towards civil war. Last week, someone leaked to the New York Times a Central Command briefing slide showing an assessment that the civil conflict in Iraq now borders on critical and has been sliding towards chaos for most of the past year. The strategy in Iraq has been to train an Iraqi army and police force that could gradually take over for U.S. troops in providing for security of their new government and their nation. But despite best efforts of American trainers, the problem of molding a viciously sectarian population into anything resembling a force for national unity has become a losing proposition. For 2 years, American sergeants, captains, and majors training the Iraqis have told their bosses that Iraqi troops have no sense of national identity, are in it only for the money, don't show up for duty, and cannot sustain themselves. Meanwhile, colonels and generals have asked their bosses for more troops. Service chiefs have asked for more money. And all along, Rumsfeld has assured us that things are well in hand. Now the president says he'll stick with Rumsfeld for the balance of his term in the White House. This is a mistake. It is one thing for the majority of Americans to think that Rumsfeld has failed. But when the nation's current military leaders start to break publicly with their defense secretary, then it is clear he is losing control of the institution he ostensibly leads. These officers have been loyal public promoters of a war policy many privately feared would fail. They have kept their counsel private, adhering to more than two centuries of American tradition of subordination of the military to civilian authority. And although that tradition and the officers' deep sense of honor prevent them from saying this publicly, more and more of them believe it. Rumsfeld has lost credibility with the uniformed leadership, with the troops, with Congress, and with the public at large. His strategy has failed, and his ability to lead is compromised. And although the blame for our failures in Iraq rests with the secretary, it will be the troops who bear its brunt. This is not about the midterm elections. Regardless of which party wins November 7th, the time has come, Mr. President, to face the hard, bruising truth. Donald Rumsfeld must go. End quote. This may be the first time the president has really listened to the troops on the ground. He didn't listen when the capture of bin Laden was outsourced to the Afghani militia that once fought alongside Osama bin Laden, then lost him at Tora Bora. He didn't listen when Rumsfeld said the weapons were in Tikrit and the regions northwest, east, and south, which, if you draw it in your mind, is pretty much just a big circle that can encompass anywhere from 5 miles to the entire globe. He didn't listen when Rummy told our soldiers asking why they had to armor their vehicles with scrap metal from the garbage, then said,
"You go to war with the army you have, not the army you might want."
He didn't listen when Rummy sent letters of condolences to our fallen soldiers' families signed by a machine. He didn't listen when the methods of torture or interrogation led to one of our soldiers committing suicide due to the orders from her superiors to commit what she considered cruel torture, as documented by this from Democracy Now!
Did the torture of Iraqi prisoners lead an American soldier to take her own life? The question is being raised on the heels of new disclosed military documents kept under wraps for the past 3 years. Specialist Alyssa Peterson was 27 years old when she died on September 15, 2003. She was the third female soldier to lose her life in the Iraq War. Peterson was assigned as an interrogator to a U.S. airbase in Tal Afar. The military listed her death as the result of a, quote, non-hostile weapons discharge. But the newly uncovered military documents reveal Peterson actually shot herself with her service rifle. The documents also show her suicide came just 2 weeks after she refused to take part in further interrogations of Iraqi prisoners and had asked to be reassigned. Peterson had taken part in just two interrogation sessions. James D. Hamilton, Peterson's first sergeant, told investigators, quote, "It was hard for her to be aggressive to prisoners, detainees, as she felt that we were cruel to them." Military officials refused to describe what techniques Peterson had objected to and said all records of them had been destroyed.
And the president didn't listen to retired generals who actually served in Iraq and testified and spoke up for Rumsfeld to resign. Only after the Army Times editorial, articles by David Frum, who was his former speechwriter, and Richard Pearl, who was a chief neocon, that both called this administration and its handling of the war by Donald Rumsfeld and the subsequent loss of control in Afghanistan, that they called this administration dysfunctional. Dysfunctional? Calling this dysfunctional is disrespectful to those people who appear on Jerry Springer. You know, this is not dysfunctional, it's out and out incompetence. You know, led by a Secretary of State that once said, this is how long the war in Iraq would last.
It could last, 6 days, 6 weeks, I doubt 6 months.
And we are also talking about a Secretary of Defense that one time said this particular quote, quote, "I don't know what the facts are, but somebody's certainly going to sit down with him and find out what he knows that they may not know and make sure he knows what they know that he may not know," end quote. Or how about we remember this little gem?
As we know, there are known knowns. There are things we know. We also know there are known unknowns. That is to say, we know there are some things we do not know. But there are also unknown unknowns. The ones we don't know, we don't know. And if one looks throughout the history of our country and other free countries, it is the latter category that tend to be the difficult ones.
And together we all said, what? We laughed at this, but at the same time, I found myself thinking, you know, we all need a Rumsfeld to English dictionary because none of it makes any sense. But it took a political beating to wake up this president. And the question that will always hold over our heads like a big gray cloud is, would he have had Donald Rumsfeld resign if he hadn't have suffered this political beating? Because by his own words, by saying that he had misled this country and had chosen not to talk about the possible resignation of Donald Rumsfeld, means that the only thing that mattered was politics and power, and it was all he cared about despite a flawed plan in Iraq. But we did win the House, and we did win the Senate.
It's peanut butter jelly time! Peanut butter jelly time! Peanut butter jelly time!
Okay, I'll stop that. Let's see. If we do look into what happened in this past election cycle, there was, you know, once again, obvious problems with the election system. I see myself, when I got to the voting booths, the machines were broken down, and it took a while to get there. And it was kind of a funny story, because when I showed up, I immediately said, I would like to vote on a paper ballot. And what I was told was, our machines are down. Would you mind waiting about 15 minutes? And I said, that's okay. I'm not worried about the machines. I just want a paper ballot. To which she said, you know, it's not a problem. If you want to come back or if you just want to wait around, you know, we'll have the machines up. And I said, it's all right. I want to vote on a paper ballot. And the woman once again looks at me and she goes, but if you want, you can vote on a paper ballot. And I said, that's good because that's what I want. And it was funny because even when I got the paper ballot, I didn't even get a complete paper ballot, which was, you know, somewhat sad. And I don't blame this on any type of big conspiracy. I just think it's the overwhelming thing that occurs with our electoral system. And it is amazing to me that in the year 2006, the 21st century, we still do not have a working electoral system. And that's only a small reflection of the problems forced by machines that broke down and included people voting in this manner in California.
I mean, the ironic thing we were saying is they had to switch to paper ballots in a lot of places because they couldn't get the machines to work, you know?
That's right. And they didn't have enough paper ballots. You know, I was screaming, hey, man, have enough paper ballots ready to go. And they didn't. Out here in California, they had run out of English paper ballots,
right.
And people were actually voting on Vietnamese and Chinese ballots just so they could get their vote in.
The worst part of this election were the efforts by those to prevent people from voting and their tactics. From Tan Nguyen, whose staff sent letters warning immigrants not to vote, to calls like this to a Virginia voter.
Here we go.
This is Message Opportunity Daily. This is the Virginia Elections Commission. We've determined that you're registered in New York to vote. Therefore, you will not be allowed to cast your vote on Tuesday. If you do show up, you will be charged.
Then came the use of robocalls that presented problems like this.
Meanwhile, Democratic Congress members John Conyers and John Dingell have asked the Justice Department and other agencies to investigate the Republican use of so-called robocalls. Conyers and Dingell said the National Republican Campaign Committee has reportedly spent $600,000 to repeatedly send out pre-recorded phone calls that confuse voters and are designed to generate anger at Democratic candidates. The Washington Post reported one woman from Ohio called the paper in tears yesterday, saying she could not keep her phone line open to hospice workers caring for her terminally ill mother because of nonstop political robocalls.
or the use of political ads were paid for through our tax dollars through radio stations like this.
In California, an ad for Republican Senate candidate Dick Mountjoy was forced onto the radio airwaves through the use of the Federal Emergency Alert System. Just after 10 o'clock Monday morning, KFBK, a conservative talk radio station in Sacramento, initiated the required monthly test of EAS. After the end of the standard test, the station also sent the political ad. Listeners to the community radio station KDVS heard this message Monday morning on its airwaves.
This concludes this test of the emergency alert system.
It's estimated that 4 to 10 million illegal immigrants cross into the United States every year, and they're not just coming for jobs. It's hard to believe, but since 9/11, more Americans have died at the hands of illegal aliens than died in the terrorist attacks and the war in Iraq combined.
The conservative station KFBK reportedly claimed the ad was sent out by mistake.
In some ways, I have to go off on my own little political rant about this, because I've talked about this subject before when it deals with the immigration issue. In podcast number 5, I talked about it under the concept that racism is not border security. But I continuously get upset by this, you know, by this type of thinking, that here we go, let's fearmonger by talking about the 1 million-man Mexican criminal army that's about to come over here to kill you. You know, lest we forget about the amount of murders that occur at the hands of American citizens upon American citizens, including those upon women, where reportedly every 6 hours a woman dies due to spousal abuse, or the amount of people that die each year from drunk driving or drug-related automobile accidents, or the amount of cancer victims that die due to smoking or cancer caused by the amount of carcinogens in our food and water placed there by criminal corporations, or the amount of people who die from malnutrition or lack of proper health care that they can't even afford. Yeah, focus on the 1 million, you know, man Mexican criminal army, but don't focus on the things that are here and in front of us every day. That type of small thinking amazes me, and I cannot believe that our tax money, my tax money, went into paying for that ad to run on that radio station during the emergency alert system. But I'm going to find my happy place. My happy place actually is the same happy place that Happy Gilmore has, so right now I'm thinking about beer. You know, we did win the House and Senate, but we have to win back our ability to vote, and no, it will not be tampered at the booths or through suppression. It's up to this new Democratic Party to make that change possible, but it's also up to us to make sure that they do so, or this hold in the House and Senate will be very short-lived. And it better be done through bipartisan measures, because the next 2 years is going to be a battle between who can be the most bipartisan. And it's up to this Democratic Party to come across looking a lot better. But, once again, it's our job to hold them accountable. Our work has just started. The one-party rule is over. But the work is not. And now, here's the final ad from our newest sponsor.
So what are the final numbers?
We lost the House, putting John Conyers as chair of the judiciary.
Want to get away? Southwest Airlines offers flights linking to non-extradition countries twice a day, every day, out of the Washington, D.C. area.
You are now free to move about the country.
Well, as always, we end off this week's podcast with the What a Winnie Award. And this week's What a Winnie Award sadly goes to the very large percentage of people who did not vote, thus solidifying our place, according to Active Democracies, pretty much down near the bottom of the totem pole. If you take a time to look, and I'll have the link up, it's a Wikipedia site for countries with active voter turnout, the United States is pretty much down near the bottom. And this is sad, because in some ways it only seems to solidify this argument made by Bill Maher.
And finally, new rule, America must stop bragging that it's the greatest country on earth and start acting like it. Now, I know... I know this is uncomfortable for the faith over facts crowd, but the greatness of a country can, to a large degree, be measured. Here are some numbers. Infant mortality rate. America ranks 48th in the world. Overall health, 72nd. Freedom of the press, 44. Literacy, 55th. Do you realize there are 12-year-old kids in this country who can't spell the name of the teacher they're having sex with? Now, America, I will admit, has done many great things. Making the New World democratic comes to mind. The Marshall Plan, curing polio, beating Hitler, the deep-fried Twinkie. But what have we done for us lately? We're not the freest country. That would be Holland, where you can smoke hash in church and Janet Jackson's nipple is on their flag. And sadly, we're no longer a country that can get things done either. Not big things, like building a tunnel under Boston or running a war with competence. We had 6 years to fix the voting machines. Couldn't get that done. The FBI is just now getting email. Prop 87 out here in California is about lessening our dependence on oil by using alternative fuels. And Bill Clinton comes on at the end of the ad and says, if Brazil can do it, America can too. Excuse me, since when did America have to buck itself up by saying we could catch up to Brazil? We invented the airplane and the light bulb. They invented the bikini wax, and now they're ahead?
Okay, I let that go on for a little bit longer, but just to make a good point. You know, trust me, I understand. You know, I understand how busy our lives get. Jobs, family, friends, our health, you know, emergencies that come up. You know, maybe not even having so much as a way to get to the polls. I get it. But if your excuse is one, just not having the time, or two, saying, why does it matter, then yours are the worst excuses of all. One, if time is your issue, register for an absentee ballot and vote at home. Fill it out when the kids are asleep or, you know, during commercial breaks for Dancing with the Stars or whatever next poorly produced reality show comes out in a couple of years. You know, if it's about not knowing or understanding the candidates or the issues, talk to a few people you trust. Inform yourself. It's vital not just for voting, but in life as well. You know, I'm going to quote from The American President, a movie that I enjoy, you know, a bit here. But America is not easy. America is advanced citizenship. You've got to want it bad. You know, it requires time and effort because so much was given to ensure that we could vote, that we could share ideas like we are doing right now, and that we could be free to our life, liberty, and property. And yes, free to choose or not choose to worship the religions we hold dear. That is why the second choice is so poor in its reasoning, you know, to say that it doesn't matter. Our right to vote is as important and linked to all the beliefs that I just mentioned, the ones that we hold dear and precious. Think of it. In 2000, 535 people were all the difference between Bush and Gore. And those were the votes in Florida. That's like what the difference came out down to. 535 people. Imagine if 536 people had just voted for Al Gore. You know, that's probably the same amount of people that, you know, you could fit into like a couple of theaters at a multiplex. And that would be the amount of people that would have changed history. So, even then, you may be still saying to yourself, why does it matter? You know, I spent this weekend knocking on doors trying to convince people to vote for a candidate I knew might lose. And sadly, he did. You know, but I still did it. Many people did the same thing throughout my district and also throughout the country. They fought for winning causes, they fought for losing causes. But you do it, not because you fight the fights you think you can win. You do it because you fight the fight that need fighting. These are our rights, our values, but they come with a price that comes from each of us taking a moment of time to exercise that right to vote. We do it, not just to keep this great experiment we call America as a beacon of who we all can be, but to keep each other in check and accountable. Good people matter, and we can each make a difference. And if you did not vote because you didn't have the time or you thought it didn't matter, well then you are a big weenie. Go register to vote. Go vote in 2 years. Vote for the next primaries that are coming up. But be part of the process and vote. Let's keep this new democratic leadership in check. Well, I'd like to thank you all again for listening. If you are listening to the Progressive Podcast Network, be sure to check out more of those wonderful people who are doing great work over there. Check into their forums, check into their blogs, be part of that as well. And if you are listening through WIRN, thank you very much for taking the time to listen. Let's see, this music for this podcast, I would be remiss without thanking Matt Bloodwell and the guys at Megaphone for allowing me to use their music, Not Your Enemy, from the album For Crying Out Loud. You can find that album through www.megaphonemusic.net or through their MySpace account at www.myspace.com/megaphone. Of course, those links are available at the homepage for Indirect Democracy, and you can also purchase their music through iTunes. Once again, thank you for taking the time to listen. Be sure to take care of each other. I will see you next week. Bye for now. Somebody pass around the moose drooled brown ale. It's time to party.